You are listening to a sermon by Alamal Puljek Schenk, recorded on Sunday, May 20th, 2018, at the Point Grey Interminonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only, and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Thank you. This is our MCC mission and vision statement, and you can read for yourselves, but this is where we ground ourselves. This is who we are. This is who our partners know that we are. And this is what gives us the strength to actually do the work that we are doing across the world. The sermon this morning and the conversation this morning will focus on two parts. One is my personal story, kind of like an introduction, and then a bit of a PowerPoint talking about our partners and work that we have done in Syria. And then, of course, I'm open for any questions that you have. I oversee programs in Europe and Middle East, so the questions don't have to focus solely on the sermon. It can be anything that you have questions on. And if I don't know the answer, I will say, I don't know the answer. I'll go and look for the answer, and John will bring you the answer. First, I want to thank you for giving me a time this morning, and I want to thank you for wonderful songs. They really filled my heart today. I didn't know that there is a club here of favorite hymns. So I will join with in the club that has 31 and 301 there. And of course, Healing River is one of my all-time favorites. I will reflect on Matthew 5:9. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the children of God. I chose this text because it has been so meaningful for me. So I will first read it in the context of Matthew 5:1-11. I will describe my own journey to peace building, coming out of my experience as a refugee during the war in Bosnia. And I will talk about how we in MCC work to respond to Jesus' call to be peacemakers. Now when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up to on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach them, saying, Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil things against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. My reflection will come from a peace-building angle, as my focus is on conflict transformation. This was the focus of my graduate studies. My desire to learn more about conflict and how to transform it and create or make peace was the outcome of me living through and surviving the war in Bosnia and Herzegovina that lasted from 92 to 96. Being in the midst of war makes you really long for peace, so badly, that once the war is over, at first you are lost because peace does not look like you imagined. There's really not like woohoo moment. It is not happy moment. It is a moment of grief, pain, and mourning for what has been lost, and the moment of realization that your life and everybody else's life will never be the same again. Life is forever changed. And I and other people were forever changed. So that illusion that once the war is over, we will go back to the same old was gone. And realization that the same old does not exist anymore. I am Alamal Puljek Schenk, and the Puljek part comes from Bosnia and Herzegovina, actually from Croatia, and then also from Bosnia and Herzegovina. I married Randall Schenk of Aphrodite, Pennsylvania, and together we became Pulik Schenk. We have a 10-year-old son, Isaac, which is the Bosnian version of Isaac. I met my husband, Randall, in Bosnia during the war, and we both worked for the German Mennonites. And our work was focused on providing food and care for elderly, poor, internally displaced. We worked with children in the refugee camps and advocated with the local military for return of the people to their homes that they fled months or years previously. My family and I were internally displaced people. We fled our home in October of 92 due to the front lines being broken while the enemy soldiers were streaming into the city. We fled due to the fear of being captured, tortured, or raped. Prior to fleeing our home in October of 92, from April until October of 92, basically my hometown was under the siege and bombardment on a daily basis by the shelling, tanks, airplanes, snipers, you name it. It was a menu we could choose from. My family and I and 45,000 other people from my town went through the daily horrors of bombardment. We lost friends, family members. We really mourned and grieved. We were angry and wanted to take revenge for that and suffering for our loved ones. We also found places of hope in the simple acts of kindness that we got from each other. My family returned home 10 years after we fled in 2002. Randall and I in our work were crossing front lines, and basically our work was working as much as possible with all the sides in the conflict. Working with all the sides in the conflict was very challenging for me. As in my mind, it was very clear who was the victim and who was the offender. I and my side were the victims, and the enemy were those who were attacking us. I never really wanted to know them, meet them. Forgiveness was not an option, and certainly reconciliation was not even thought of, and that didn't really enter my mind. There was so much hurt and pain in me that revenge was more possible than reconciliation. Actually, it was the only option for a while, as I believed that hurting those back that hurt me would erase my pain and heal me. And probably most of my community felt like that, regardless of which side of the conflict you were on. During this time, I started reading the Gospel of Matthew again. I needed a spiritual lift, nourishment, and cleansing. I needed to feel alive and living again, as all in me was, quite frankly, numb from pain. So innocently, I started reading the Gospel of Matthew, and I fell in love with the Gospel all over again. This time, falling in love was the deepest and the hardest. I think the reason for this was my internal yearning to heal, and the words from the Gospel were soothing and healing. I thought innocently that I would find the nourishment that I needed from the words and would eventually move to Gospel of Mark and so on. You know, when you have this feeling that Bible is just this wonderful book that will nourish you, if you don't go deeper, if you don't ask some questions, if you don't allow God to ask you some questions, just kind of hoped you would glide over. I believe as I was thinking, I will engage lightly, and I was really wrong. What happened was a total turnaround. What caught my attention this time, more than before, was the Sermon on the Mount, especially the Beatitudes, and particularly Beatitude in verse 9. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the children of God. There was a message for me in this Beatitude. If I wanted to find peace within myself, I needed to allow God to come within me and heal me. Only then will I experience peace and will become peaceful. But there is a catch. If I experience peace, I will change. I will not seek revenge anymore. I will embark on the road of healing that eventually, for sure, will lead to reconciliation and forgiveness. And I honestly did not want to do this. I was not ready for this. I wanted the other side to suffer, and my side had suffered. Also, when you are in the midst of war, you adjust to the fact that you have to be hyper-vigilant. You need to listen carefully for any sounds as this made the difference between being alive or dead. The sound of the bombs you can hear, and the closer to you they are, the more you cannot hear them. So that's a signal that you need to run and hide. Thus the careful hearing, listening, and quite frankly sniffing the danger so that I could avoid the danger. This is how I and my community survived. As a consequence of this, I learned how not to trust, how not to hope too much, how not to believe that all will end well. The innocence that life is beautiful was stripped away, and the reality of how thin the line is between the life and death was really clear. Before the war, I had this rosy picture of life, and life was good. In the war, I learned how ugly it can become and how ugly it was. The veil of innocence was stripped off, and the ugliness of suffering was playing itself in front of my eyes. After a while, the mistrust of life becomes part of our personalities, and predicting as much as possible the danger ahead of time was the key to all of our survival. And I did not want to die, I wanted to live, and thus fought really hard to listen carefully, hear and sniff danger before it even happened, to be a couple steps ahead. So when I read the Beatitude in verse 9, I understood that God expected of me to surrender myself to Him. And this meant surrendering my fears and to trust Him. Sure, I trusted God in this kind of a metaphysical sense, but relied and trusted myself truly. Now I was asked to give this up and trust to God fully and completely. The Bible sometimes mentions this as a time of reckoning, a time of wrestling, a time of turmoil. And this is pretty much how it was between God and I. We wrestled with each other. I really fought hard against God's calling to let go of my pain and to let God heal me. Eventually, with time and support of people around me, I gave my pain to God and embarked on the process of healing. My process of healing lasted some time. It had its own timing, its own process, and its own agenda. It was painful, and I grew quite a lot spiritually and emotionally. I basically went through trauma healing and awareness, where I got to know who I was all over again. I learned how much war changed me. I learned to accept my losses and to mourn them. I learned to find new meaning for my life and in my life. I had faith again, and I believed again in God and believed God. When I started the process of healing at first, it was focused on me only, on my needs. I came to an understanding that forgiveness cannot be really conditioned. It comes of a person's own free will when the person is ready to forgive. And forgiveness comes when enough healing takes place in the person's heart, mind, and soul. And what constitutes enough healing in reality really cannot be defined. It is felt. The heart is lighter. Laughter is more frequent and deep. Hope is present in the heart. Relationships with others are more good and positive. In the peace-building world, we talk about the cycle of violence and how to get out of it, how to break this cycle and embark on the cycle of nonviolence. The cycle of violence is the cycle where we close internally and recycle our own pain, anger, losses, to the point that this becomes our way of life, where we transfer our unhealed pain and anger to our children, and they in turn transfer it to their children. This is what we call this transgenerational transmission of trauma. And this is where I was during the times when I was angry and wanted revenge for all the pain that was inflicted upon me by the enemy. And the exit of this cycle comes from the personal decision to change and to feel less pain and anger and hatred. And this moment really comes at the point when one becomes so tired of being angry at the other. Tired of hating the other, when one recognizes that one cannot continue and go on like this. It is either change or losing oneself totally in negative emotions, a negative frame of mind. It is the act of saving oneself. This process is extremely hard and long, and it is a lifelong commitment. It is difficult at first, but with practice and time, it gets better. The end result is realizing that our enemies are actually human beings. Basically, we humanize the enemy again and recognize and accept they are creation of God, equally loved and cared for by God. In this process, we rehumanize ourselves. And this is the funny thing about healing process. What we forget is that by dehumanizing other, we actually dehumanize ourselves. And by humanizing other, we become human beings again. And that's when we become one with God. It's such a trick. It's hard, because the pain keeps us from that one with God. This is a magical moment to experience God's grace, fully and utterly, immersed in the grace of God that pours over us like a waterfall, and every single drop is the unconditional love and acceptance of me and all of us by God. It is the living water that gives life new meaning and the new power to want to live life to the fullest. Though this incredible grace of God came the peace of, through this incredible grace of God came the peace of God. The peace of God was in me, and I was peace. For me, the Beatitudes are it. That's it. The whole Bible, the Old and the New Testament, the Beatitudes are my anchor in my faith, in my work, in my life. And don't get me wrong, I'm not perfect. There's lots of pitfalls. There's a lot of failings. But the process of learning, getting up, and having them before me and within me are the guiding principle of how I would like my life to go, professionally and personally. And I found in our work through MCC that these Beatitudes relate to us, of course, and we find ourselves in as an organization. MCC is Relief, Development, and Peacebuilding Organization. And as such, by our mission and vision statement, we are called to interact with others, to be with others, not necessarily with those who are like us, Christians, but also others who are Muslims, who are secular, who are atheists, with the goal of creating better life, better kingdom on this earth, and hopefully kingdom of heaven. If you can go. This is just some statistics about Syrian refugees. There are 6.1 million people internally displaced and 5.6 million refugees externally displaced. The total population of Syria is 20 million. So about more than half of that number is suffered enormous losses. And those who were not displaced either have family members who have been in military, have lost family members. So the whole country, on one level or another, has suffered greatly. And I will come back how that relates to Beatitudes. I did not lose the thread. Many of the refugees, internally displaced people, basically have been displaced 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 times. So it's not only fleeing once from ISIS, but fleeing from another fractions, fundamental fractions, fleeing from the government forces itself. So people have experienced multiple displacements. They're kind of urban refugees, which means that they, wherever, for example, in this city of Vancouver, if you would have about 300,000 refugees just kind of come and streaming into the city, any building that is not populated by anybody, any literally a shed, the church basements, the gymnasiums were filled with people who have come with nothing but maybe bundles in their hands and the children in their arms. Some of them were able at first, because of the financial means, to rent apartments. Eventually, this is a 7th year of war. You run out of money. And then you have to move to other conditions, to other places that are less good for you and your family. And usually those are unfinished concrete houses or warehouses that are really, really cold, but you are happy that you have a roof over your head and that your family can be in there. And of course, there is always access to water, access to food, access to hygiene items, education for the children, all lacking. When we were in Syria in November of 2017, and again in February of 2018, we were in part of the Damascus that was freed from al-Nusra forces. And in that improvised camp, there was about 25,000 people who erected the tents made out of the blankets, made out of the plastic foil, so that they could actually have a space that is private to be with their family. But they did not have a water, they did not have a bathrooms. And the way how people survived was actually going back and fetching the water and bringing it into the camp and actually digging hole in the ground, in the sand, to have a bathrooms. And we were coming to visit them to see how we can respond to their needs. I felt so devastated. I felt completely overwhelmed with the level of need that was there. But our partner, Forum for Development, was absolutely local partner organization in Syria with the people on the ground there every day, bringing the food packages, bringing the water. And I looked at them and I thought, by God, if they have this resiliency of the spirit, I can find it the same in this 5 days of a visit. This is Homs in 2015 after ISIS was pushed out. And the city was really, really destroyed, as you could see from the previous slide. And when people were coming back, they couldn't go into the houses because they were booby-trapped. So a couple of people actually died while they were trying to clean their houses. This is in November, in 2018, now in February. And the difference, only difference is that the middle of the road is actually clean. All of this is completely damaged. And the buildings are in such a state that the construction is not sound at all, and people cannot actually come back in. So those 6-point-something million people that are internally displaced actually don't have a place to go back in. It will take about $248 billion and growing for Syria to rebuild its infrastructure. The devastation was huge. It was kilometers and kilometers of the city of Homs literally devastated like this. And there were certain parts of the city that were pretty much looking like the first slide. They were not still cleaned. This is a family that we visited, Sami and Amina from Aleppo. This is Sami and this is Amina. And this is their cousin. Their conditions are actually pretty good when you compare to some other houses that we have seen. They were owners of the bakery, very successful bakery in Aleppo. They had to flee because their part of the city was overtaken by ISIS and was completely damaged. So they kind of stayed in Aleppo for a little bit with family members and friends, and eventually came to Homs and found a place in this unfinished building. Their windows had actually had the glass on it, which was a big deal because most of the windows had the plastic only on it. And they're recipients of MCC's food package. And food package that MCC together with a partner brings to the family lasts for about 2 weeks. Sami is actually looking for a job and does odd jobs here and there so that they could actually survive 2 other weeks in the month. And it continues to be a hard situation for the family, but this is a third time that they have been displaced. And this is their third place that they were living in. And they were hoping that they will not have to move again. Their hope is eventually to go back to Aleppo, to actually rebuild their house, to build again back the business. And I was in Aleppo, and the site of Aleppo that we have seen is complete devastation like in Homs. So at this point, in the East Aleppo, they just can't return. So they will have to stay in Homs. And where this relates to Beatitudes is that this young gentleman here, Dr. Riyad Jajur, is Presbyterian pastor. It's our partner, who devoted his life in actually walking with people closely on the ground and has connected with Islamic Charity in Deir Azur, where these pictures are from in Syria. And together with Islamic Charity, Presbyterian pastor and Islamic Islam imam are actually helping people who are Muslims in this community. So to me, he exemplifies, blessed are the peacemakers. Now, within the Islamic Charity, who are local people and native to Deir ez-Zor, the refugees that come are not only the refugees from the side that is good, but are also the refugees that are actually fundamentally soldiers' wife, their children. So there is an internal level of peace building that's happening that we are not even aware of. And this Islamic Charity did not ask, where is your husband? Where is your son? Why are you here? Do you believe in the fundamentalist Islamic values? Are you Muslim like us, or are you different Muslim? There was no questions like that. The food packages are delivered to those who need. And what really struck me when we were traveling in Deir ez-Zor, the absence of young men. They're only enlisted in the army, with the government, or by the fundamental forces. And the women are left, and all the generations, to hold the family together, to provide a food for the family together. There was a mother with 7 children. 3 of those are disabled. The oldest child is Amina. She's about 12. She's going to school. The youngest boy is about 9, and he goes to school. And the two of them switch in taking care of the siblings, because the mother goes out and cleans the houses, and it's paid for that. And this is their third time that they're displaced, and they finally found a place in homes. And the children go and shift in the school. So one stays at home and takes care of other siblings while another goes to school, and then they switch so that they could help their mother. The woman, when I saw her, I was blown away. The resiliency of this woman, the strength of this woman, the stubbornness of this woman, the persistency, and the children at that age to know what their responsibility towards their family is. It was incredible. This is a beautiful young woman. She is working with the Islamic Charity and cooperates with Riyadh very closely. She, her story is, her name is Maryam, or Miriam, and she, they were under siege as well in Deir ez-Zor. She was very afraid, really ran through the trauma in so many ways. And when finally, when it was over, when ISIS was pushed from their town, she was able to finish her school, and she's IT, in IT, information technology, and got an offer to go to Damascus and teach in one of the schools. She turned the offer down and stayed in Deir ez-Zor, and it's basically working with Islamic Charity in doing home visits with the families and delivering the food packages. And the reason for her to do this was that she wanted to actually be actor of change, actor of doing something good in her community. To me, that reflects Beatitudes, right there and then. And these young people are from Damascus, volunteers who work in a core of old city of Damascus, who visit families in old city of Damascus, bring the food, bring medication, clean the people who cannot clean themselves, clean their houses, because their elderly cannot take care of themselves. There's no family members that can take care of themselves. And this is crucially important because old city of Damascus is under the siege. It was all the time. And when we were in a visit in February there, we actually couldn't go because it wasn't safe for us, 8 or 10, to go. There was just bombardments 24/7. And these young people came from the old city to meet with us in a hotel, about maybe 20, 25 minutes away. That was safer for, they were worrying about us and not about themselves. And when I asked them, why are you doing this work? One of them said, one day when this war is over and my children ask me, they're not married there, or they're hoping to have the children at some point, and my children ask me, what did you do in the war? I want to be able to tell them that I did something. And it's incredible strength of spirit. They're in their 20s, 21, 22, 23, attending university. And when there's a lull in the fire, exchange of the arms, they quickly gather themselves, go and do what they need to do to be with the people, bring the food, and then leave. And then do that on a daily basis. And that night they met with us, there is Father Michael there from the Syrian Orthodox Church, and just, they were just sharing these incredible stories with us of their strength and resiliency. And when we asked them, what would you like to do? And then they list a long list of things that they would like. We would like to learn about planning, monitoring, evaluation, and reporting. We would like to learn how better to help people. We would like to learn how to be present with elderly and how to... We would like, could you help? It was really focused on how can you help us do what we are doing better. And none of them really reflected on, do they want it to leave? Yeah, they're scared. There are times when they're really scared. But they go out every day. So for me, these slides are a reflection of what Beatitudes called us to do. It's a call to action. In the midst of the circumstances where we do feel helpless and hopeless, the Jesus actually asked us to take a charge of our lives, and we can do that, and to put it into action, to move, to change, to be active participants in the community where we are in and part of. In MCC, we do it through our local partners. The local partners on the ground are actually carriers of these Beatitudes on a daily basis. And even though what I have shared with you is a dark, it's a bleak, it's not ending, it's still going on, when I look at these names and when I look at these faces and I prepare the PowerPoint, and when people ask me, well, where's the hope? Well, there is the hope. For me, there is the hope. The hope is not this like yoo-hoo moment that will come later, but them being active and present and us walking with them and helping them to do what they're doing is enormous act of hope. And this is the prayer that I just would like to close with, and we will sing it later. Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where is despair, hope. And where is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. O divine master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, it is in pardoning that we are pardoned, it is in dying that we are born to eternal life. Amen. Thank you.